Alex Anthopoulos joins us to kind of put a nice tie, a nice little bow on this. And Alex, I know you had something going on tonight that you've stepped away from for a little. So I really do appreciate your time. Thanks so much for joining us.
No problem, Mike. Glad to be on.
Glad to have you. Last night, was that the most insane baseball game that you've ever seen in your life?
You know what? It was great, and it just makes the game great. And even, you know, my wife, when I met her, I was working for the Jays at the time, but she wasn't a baseball fan. And obviously, over the years, she's been to so many games, she's become a fan, and she's more into the playoffs than I am, and she loved it. And for someone who's not, you know, I know it's surprising because she's so immersed in it with my job, for her to love the game and to see the joy, I think it was one of the best games that I've seen in a long time. And I remember when I was a kid, I remember where I was when the Braves beat the Pirates. I remember when the Mariners advanced, when Junior hit the home run, and that was going to go down as a game I'm going to remember for years.
Yeah, there's no question. And when you look at all the crazy things that happened, that the Cardinals were down to their last strike twice, the first team ever to score in the 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th of the same playoff game. The Rangers were the first team to blow 3 saves in the same World Series game. It was so ugly early and then so huge and clutch and dramatic at the end. It was almost like you saw the entire spectrum of what the game could be.
I completely agree, and that's as much as you think games are over and you're one out away, and you know, you just, this whole playoffs, even the end of the season, the way the playoff races went down in September, you know, that last night with Boston and Tampa, and now what you're seeing here, this has been, you know, from a fan standpoint, what a fun time to watch and what a great time to be a fan.
There's no question about it. And the last thing on this note that I'll say to you is with a game that you and I both love and in which we both have decided to make our lives. I mean, the best part I think about it is, you know, I know that baseball fights for attention with all the other major sports, but you know, you can't kneel down and run out the clock. You can't punt away from the guy who's going to hurt you. You can't foul the guy who can't hit free throws. You have to get 27 outs. And to me, that's the most beautiful thing about it.
I think it's a great point. And it's never over. I mean, one, two strikes, like you said, you're not running against the clock. You don't have to worry about timeouts. At any time, you could start a rally, no matter how many runs you're down. And especially in, you know, do-or-die playoffs, World Series games, two great teams, great ballparks to play in, and just a lot of excitement. It's been a lot of fun to be a fan. I haven't had a chance to watch all the playoffs, you know, but I've been getting home a little later, but I've certainly watched the end of a lot of the games, and it's been a lot of fun to watch.
Tell us a little bit about the, you know, from the inside stuff, the guys you know. Tell us a little bit about John Daniels and John Mozeliak.
Sure. No, they're both great guys, and I'm obviously only being a GM for 2 years. I'm getting to know them a little bit more. But even as an AGM, I got to know them a little bit. But again, I wasn't an AGM when they were AGM, so didn't get a chance to build relationships that way. But now, obviously, in a GM position, get to talk to them with trades. And, you know, they're similar in style in a lot of ways. They're both mild-mannered, total pros, good human beings. They get after it and work hard. And I think it's easier for me to connect with them because we're certainly close in age, John Daniels more so than Mo. But, you know, John Mozeliak as well, being a younger GM, you tend to connect with those guys a little bit more. And I think with guys that are a little more experienced, I enjoy getting on the phone with those guys as well because I get to pick their brains. They've been doing the job for so long. So every GM I get a chance to get to know or talk to, they bring something else. And even whether you're talking trade or doing something, you know, you're hoping whether it's for 5 minutes or an hour on the phone, you learn something one way or the other, whether they realize they're showing you something.
With Alex Anthopoulos here, are you ready for another winter of being tied to everyone that there's a rumor about?
Yeah, you know what? It already started. So, and that I'm fine with. Obviously, it's, you know, now 2 years on the job, I know we're going to be linked to everybody. And, you know, a lot of times, sometimes I try to think, okay, why did somebody, I know we're going to get used. And that's, I think, what happens a lot of times is we get used for whatever reason, to hopefully drive up the price. And there was a lot of examples of what happened with some of the signings last year, players that we never even called on, that we were linked to, we were supposedly close to deals with, heavy negotiations and so on. But sometimes that's not the worst thing in the world. And I think what I've learned to do, rather than get, I guess, irritated or frustrated with it, because if we don't come out and deny those rumors, it's certainly on us. There's potentially ways to use that to our advantage. So if people want to make up a rumor about certain things or link us to certain players, I think there's ways that we can use that rumor to our advantage when we're negotiating for something else.
With Alex Anthopoulos, and you said it's already started, and that was the story in the Boston Globe the other day, that the Blue Jays have not ruled out David Ortiz as a potential free agent acquisition. And someone called me during the rainout and asked me about that. And my answer to that was, well, the World Series is still going on. Nobody's filed for free agency yet, so you haven't even ruled anybody in. How can you rule anybody out?
Right, and I think it's, you know, without, again, I'll never get specific on a rumor, but you're exactly right. I think, you know, from one standpoint, I think if a rumor is going to be created, I think if you're delicate enough with the words, it works. And if you want to start a rumor that, say, we haven't ruled out X player, well, I think you could say that probably about every single free agent on the board right now, because like you said, they haven't filed for free agency. We haven't even got started. We haven't gotten involved. We're still actually in our prep, and that's why, from my standpoint, I enjoy the playoffs, but I also cringe when they're about to end, because I know it's pretty much go time, and it means we're going full speed ahead, start tomorrow. And it's not that we haven't been working hard and haven't been preparing, but the floodgates open the minute all these guys file, and phone calls, and as tight as our days seem now, and as much as we don't feel like we have a lot of time, the train starts and it won't stop for anybody. And that's the way, really, it feels like, I find, as a big league GM, the minute the World Series is done.
What kind of window do you have for your own guys, or is that about to end as well? And, you know, Kelly Johnson's going to be a free agent, Frank Francisco, and a lot of the bullpenners, Jose Molina as well. Do you still have a couple of days to talk to them before anybody else can, or as soon as the World Series is over and they file, that's it?
Well, pretty much as soon as the World Series is over and they file, they're free to talk with whoever they want to. But in terms of window, anybody that has a club option attached to their contract, you have until 3 days after the World Series to make a determination on that option. So, you know, that's the one thing that you have a little bit more time there. And that really gives you 3 days. If we have players that have a club option attached to their contracts, you know, it allows us to take those 3 days, as much as it doesn't seem like a lot of time, to call some other agents and get a sense for what the market might be for some of those guys, and, you know, maybe try to make a determination that way, and just to see who's going to be out there and see if any teams, you know, who might be already off the board, because teams right now, I know some of them are obviously trying to re-sign their own current free agents, and there might be some guys that come off the board tonight or, you know, the following day.
I'm just trying off the top of my head to think, is Roush the only one who's a free agent with a club option?
Roush has a club option, and Edwin Encarnacion has a club option. So those are the only two.
I guess we're all, and I know you won't say anything, but we're all just assuming you'll pick up at least Edwin after the way he finished this year, but I'll just leave that at that and ask you about the guy that we had on before you. Jesse Litch was on taking calls and talking about his year and the difference between pitching out of the bullpen and being in the starting rotation. And the difference in his numbers was significant, and in his, I don't want to say ability, but his ability to affect a ball game over a short period of time really did seem to be significant as a reliever. Is that how you see him now going forward?
I think so. And he asked me that as well when we made the change and converted him to the bullpen. Obviously, I think he still has hopes that he can get back to the starting rotation at some point. But again, I told him, I said, right now our thoughts with him is to be a reliever going forward. Might he have the opportunity to start again? Sure. You know, we may go into spring training depending on what our rotation candidates look like. We may stretch him out just from an insurance standpoint, that if somebody does go down, or, you know, we need to option someone out, or players get hurt and so on, that he needs to slide into the rotation at the end of spring training. But, you know, going forward, we see him as a reliever. We think he'll be more effective and more valuable to the team right now, just because of some of the depth that we have in our starters, especially with that group of four guys we have in New Hampshire, adding Kyle Drabek as well, and some of the starters we have right now. So I think he did a nice job converting to the role. He's a guy that can throw a lot of days in a row. And the issue with him has always been his ability to get left-handers out. And that even improves slightly in shorter stints in the bullpen. And he knows that's certainly an area he's going to have to continue to improve. But I think he's got a chance to continue to thrive, and that's where he's going to bring the most value to the team.
A question I asked him, and I'll ask you as well. I mean, we look at stats and we see performance, but there are guys who outperform their numbers. And for me, Jesse's always been one of those guys who's kind of outperformed his numbers. And when I look at him, maybe one of the major reasons is because he's such a good defensive player. And he and Casey Jansen are phenomenal defenders as pitchers, great fielders. And those are the kind of things that you can only find out about on the scout side of things. When you're looking at pitchers, and when you're getting your reports back, and when you go out there and you take a look at it, how much more does it add when you see a guy who can really field his position?
I think it certainly adds, and we talk about it more and more, the ability to field your position, hold men on base, and like you talked about with guys like Lich and guys like Jansen, you know, they don't get talked about this way as often as probably they should, but they're both outstanding athletes. And I think the thought is, when you say someone's an athlete, you're expecting someone to be 6'5", lean, just, you know, look great in the uniform. But, you know, David Wells was a great athlete. Kirby Puckett was a great athlete. Some of the other players that maybe look better in a uniform aren't as good an athlete. And, you know, that to me is body control, just seeing the way a guy can run the bases, the way the guy moves, some of the, you know, coordination, things like that. So with both guys, and the other component is they're very competitive, they're very intense, and they're not afraid. And it's funny to hear, because a lot of our meetings right now for off-season planning, we have scouts in there, we have statistical analysts and so on. And, you know, that's one of the components, especially for guys out of the pen. You know, you really can't grade it out. There's certainly no stat for it, but we talk about someone's, I guess you want to call it guts. There's some other words that we use for it that I can't say on the radio, but, you know, and some of the stat guys laugh and the scouts laugh and we kind of joke about it, but both of those guys are not afraid, and they're intense and they're competitive. And that's a big part of being a reliever. And it's a tough thing to try to specify, but you factor in those things. You factor in the fact that they're very good athletes and they field their position. It certainly helps them.
Yeah, and as far as starting pitchers are concerned too, when you talk about the words we can't use on the radio, I remember that Brad Arnsberg once told me that he thought Ricky Romero would have to take his out to the mound with him in a wheelbarrow.
Exactly. And I think that's, you know, you hear it all the time, and it, at the same time, you have to be careful, because someone can get labeled prematurely, and I've seen it happen where a lot of people have been wrong about players in the past. So you really have to be careful when you start doing that. And again, you can't overweight it, but there's a lot of times sometimes you see guys out there with not the greatest stuff in the world, but they're not afraid. They attack, they compete. There's a fierceness to it. And like you said, with some of the starters, some of the best starters in the game in the past, you know, you could say they're mean guys, that they're jerks, or, you know, there's some other words that I can't use, but you need a little bit of that edge, and some of the great ones certainly have that, and it allows them to compete and be great.
With Alex Anthopoulos, and just before we let you go, this is something that I'm sure you get asked about a lot. I know I get asked about it a lot. If the Texas Rangers win tonight, Mike Napoli is probably going to be the most valuable player of the World Series. He was a Blue Jay for 4 days. And taking into account everything that was going on at the time, the move for Frank Francisco seemed like the right thing for the Blue Jays to do. I know you've talked about it a bit over the last few days, but just tell us a little bit about it again, the thinking behind the deal at the time, and whether or not you're still pleased with it.
Sure. And that's, and again, it's totally fair. And I expect, you know, going forward, you know, those are things I'm going to have to, I expect to be asked those things. And I think that comes as part of the job, and I'll never have an issue with answering questions on trades that work out, that don't work out, and so on. And, you know, it's part of the more trades you make, and certainly, you know, for the route that we're going, we're going to make a lot more trades. There's certainly a lot more risk that things can work on both sides. But there's no doubt at the time, the thought process behind that trade was, you know, Mike Napoli was not a straight fit for us, because we had committed and wanted to find out about J.P. Arencibia. He had just repeated Las Vegas 2 years in a row. It didn't make any sense to have him repeat it for a third year after winning the MVP, especially with a kid like Travis d'Arnaud behind him that we feel very strongly about, and we needed to continue to have some separation between both players, and even Antonio Jimenez behind him. So there was certainly a logjam there. So Mike Napoli is a guy that's got 4 years of service at the time. He's 2 years away from free agency. They're going to make around $6 million in salary arbitration, and the following year could potentially get up to $10 million. And, you know, the thought being, we didn't know truly what the opening in terms of playing time was going to be, because Edwin Encarnacion had already been signed, been made a commitment. J.Pierre Encibia, we had made a commitment to play every day, and we needed to, frankly, play him every day when we look at 6 years of control and the upside and some of the guys behind him. And obviously Adam Lind was under contract, and we needed to have him continue to play and continue to develop because of the long-term control and the financial freedom we have with all those players. So getting a guy like Frankie, we felt, was going to have a stronger season than he did. There was the upside that we could either keep him and retain him on a long-term deal if he did do well, or there was the other avenue that we felt there was a high probability to be able to, at least if he left as a free agent, get a draft pick for him, which, you know, he did rank as a type B free agent, and those are things we're going to have to determine whether he's going to come back or not. But that was certainly flexibility there. And, you know, from that standpoint, it just seemed like from a long-term fit for us, this was probably the best thing for us at the time. Knowing then what I know now, that Mike Napoli was going to have the year that he did, there's no question, you know, the value was greater than what we traded him for, and that's certainly hindsight. But I'd say from a strategy standpoint and a planning standpoint, and even having a guy like Jose Molina on the roster as well that brought a lot of value for various things, I still think in the long term, this still may work out for us just because of where the contractual status is, where the salaries are going to go to, all those things long term. But there's no question from a value standpoint, and for the 2011 team, Mike Napoli would have made us a much stronger team with the year he had, and there's no doubt about that. I think anyone would say that. And I guess it remains to be seen what the net return is when the dust settles 3, 4, 5 years down the road, you know, what ultimately the best path was and how Mike Napoli continues to evolve and what he earns in salary and so on.
Absolutely, and where he goes after he's a free agent, and if that draft pick comes back, it winds up for Frank Francisco, what you get there and going on. It's all about the long term and the like you've said many times about having this team be a perennial championship contender, and we're having a blast watching you put this together. We're going to have a lot of fun this off season, I think, hearing about potential Blue Jay moves and then the moves that actually do happen that we get to talk about with you. And again, thanks so much for this. It's been a great year, and we look forward to many great years in the future with the baseball season coming to a close tonight. Appreciate the time, Alex.
Thanks, Mike. Really enjoyed it, and hopefully we'll talk again soon in the off season.